Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 4, Vidura approaches Maitreya, text number 30. Asmān lokād uparate.
Asmān lokād uparate.
Mayi jñānam madāśrayam.
Mayi jñānam madāśrayam.
Arhatya uddhava eva dhāra.
Arhatya uddhava eva dhāra.
Sampratyātmā vatam maraha.
Sampratyātmā
Asmat, from this,
universe.
Lokat, earth,
uparate,
having disappeared, mayi,
of
myself,
jnanam,
knowledge,
matasrayam,
concerning myself, Ahati, deserves, Uddhava, Uddhava,
Eva,
certainly,
Adha,
directly,
Samprati,
at the present moment,
Atmavatam,
of the devotees, Varaha,
foremost.
Now I shall leave the vision of this mundane world, and I see that Uddhava, the foremost of my devotees, is the only one who can be directly entrusted with knowledge about me. Purport, jñānam mad asrayam, is significant in this verse. Jñānam mad asrayam. Knowledge concerning myself. Transcendental knowledge has three departmental divisions, namely knowledge of impersonal Brahman, knowledge of the all-pervading supersoul, and knowledge of the personality of Godhead. This specific knowledge out of the three, transcendental knowledge of the personality of God, it has special significance and is known as Bhagavat Tattva Vijnana, specific knowledge of the personality of Godhead. This specific knowledge is realized by pure devotional service and no other means. Bhagavad Gita 1855 confirms this. Bhaktya mam abhijanati yavan yaschasmi tattvataha. Only persons engaged in devotional service can factually know the transcendental position of the Lord. Uddhava was considered to be the best amongst all devotees of that time, and therefore he was directly instructed by the Lord's grace so that people might take advantage of Uddhava's knowledge after the disappearance of the Lord from the vision of the world. This is one of the reasons why Uddhava was advised to go to Bhadrak Ashram, where the Lord is personally represented by the Naranarayan deity. One who is transcendentally advanced can gain direct inspiration from the temple deity. And thus a devotee of the Lord always takes shelter of a recognized temple of the Lord in order to make tangible advancement and transcendental knowledge by the grace of the Lord. Om jñānati mirandasya gyananjana salakaya chakshurun vilitam jena tasmaye sri gurave namaha sri chaitanya manovishtam stapitam jena bhutale Svayam-rupa-kata-mahiyam tadatis-papadantikam mukkam karo-divachalam pangum langayate gayam yad-kripa-tamam-bande sri-gurum-dinatarinam. Prabhupada says that Jnanam Madashrayam is significant in this verse, which means knowledge about me. Prabhupada then says that there are three departments of knowledge regarding the absolute truth. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan, Iti Sabdhyate. Jnanam Yajjnanam Advayam. This knowledge is transcendental, beyond the material creation. There's no duality, advayam. No duality in the absolute truth. So everything is transcendental or spiritual. Just, you know, like milk sweets are made out of milk and sugar. An example that Prabhupada gives. Milk sweets are made out of milk and sugar, but there are different types of milk sweets. Right? Burfi, sandesh, rasagulla. So even though they're all made out of milk and sugar, there's different types of sweets. They're all the same in that they're made out of milk and sugar, but there's variety. So similarly, this advaya, this non-dual substance, this jnanam madasrayam, is divided up into three parts. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan, Iti Sabdhyate, it is said. These are the three. They're all transcendental, all spiritual, but there is still variety. So we have the Bhagavan, the Bhagavan aspect, the shelter of everything, the summum bonum, the Paramatma feature, where the Lord exists in a localized form to direct the wanderings of all of the living entities. And then there's the Brahman feature, which is an understanding of the supreme energy manifest all over. You know, everything within the creation is basically made of energy that comes from God. And even we, the living entities, are part of that energy. But it would be a mistake for us to say that we are God. In one sense, yes, we are. What is it? Mama Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Buddha Sanatana Harsh. We're eternally part and parcel of God. Manashastani Indriyani Prakritishtani Karshati. We're in the material world struggling with material existence. So we can hardly be described as the supreme God. Like Prabhupada says, you know, get a toothache and then you'll be totally bewildered. These things don't happen to God. So, part of God, but different at the same time. So one has to know this jnanam mad astrayam, this knowledge about me. Krishna saw at the end of his pastimes, in order to maintain the sampradaya or the parampara, he saw that the only qualified person or the most qualified person was Uddhava. And so therefore he instructed him to go to Bhadrik Ashrama. And that purpose. purpose was for them to receive the transcendental knowledge that Krishna had given to him, and specifically that knowledge which is contained within the Uddhava Gita. So that was the reason why Uddhava was given the instruction to go to Bhadrak Ashrama, whereas all of the other members of Yadavas were taken back home, back to Godhead, by this arrangement of the Lord for the Yadavas to destroy themselves in at Prabhacha Chetra. It was his desire, Krishna's desire, Krishna's plan. And so he was instructed, go to Bhadrak Ashrama and there distribute transcendental knowledge. Jnana Madhasrayam. Knowledge about Krishna. And specifically, knowledge about the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Bhagavan and devotional service. Because, as Prabhupada mentions here, the Bhagavan aspect and devotional service to Bhagavan has special significance. And is known as Bhagavat Tattva Vijnana. Right, so Bhagavat Tattva means knowledge of Bhagavan, knowledge of the Supreme Absolute Person. You know, there is a difference between knowledge and understanding, if you like. The example that I often give is of the times tables. You know, when we're young, in primary school or infant school, we do our times tables, and we, you know, we count up to 144, usually about 12 times 12. Interesting to note that, you know, the measurement systems, especially in weights, before metrics, they were done in multiples of 14, right, 16. People could multiply by 14 and 16. At school, we multiplied up to 12. These, you know, and metric systems meant to make it easy, so all we have to do is multiply by 10, right, decimal system. But you know, there were stones and pounds. Anybody remember that? Stones and pounds. Or even, you know, 12 inches to a foot. 3 feet to a yard. From a yard, you would have chains. Right? Anybody heard of a chain? Anybody know how long a chain is?
22 feet.
Yeah, I think it is 22 feet. 22 feet. Maybe more than that. No, it's the length of a cricket pitch. Cricket pitch. I used to live on Three Chain Road in Port Pirie because it was three chains wide. So three cricket pitches wide was the road, the Three Chain Road. So, you know, people used to be able to count in a lot more more than the decimal system, in 22s, in 16s, in 14s. So, you know, we learn this information by rote, the times tables. We learn it by rote. Up to 12 times 12 is 144, right? Or is it? Yeah. So, but at the time we learn it, we haven't got a clue really how to use it. Right? So there's one thing to know the tables and what 12 times 12 actually adds up to. But it's not until one, and usually, you know, we learn how to count very quickly when our parents give us money. And, when I was a kid, on Monday morning, on Mondays we were allowed to buy our lunch from the tuck shop. Right? And we were given 2 shillings, which is equivalent to 20 cents. Only in those days, 2 shillings was 24 pence. We counted in 12s. So, you know, you'd order a pie and a cream bun, and that would take up pretty much 20 pence. So you'd have 4 pence left over for sweets. So then you had to decide what sweets you'd buy with 4 pence, which is 4 cents, basically. When we went from decimal currency, when we went from pounds, shillings and pence to decimal currency, they pinched four pence off of us. Two shillings became 20 cents, and a shilling became 10 cents. So anyway, when we got the shilling, before I got the shilling, I didn't really know the value of it, but once I had the shilling and it was time to go to the tuck shop to buy loaves, and I soon worked out how to apply arithmetic to using my 2 shillings and getting my 4 cents of lollies worth. So initially we don't understand, you know, 1 and 1 plus 2, 2 and 2 is 4, and so forth. We learn that information by rote. But then it's practical application when we're able to use that information to manage our lives and to organize ourselves. It becomes, from theoretical, it becomes practical. So this is tattva and jnana and vijnana. There's knowledge. You know, you can absorb so much knowledge out of the Srimad Bhagavatam or out of the Bhagavad Gita. But this knowledge is meant to be applied in daily life. As Prabhupada says, we're not armchair philosophers that just sit around talking about philosophy and then don't do anything about it. The philosophy is studied and absorbed and assimilated so that it can then be practically applied. This is the most important learning. And so, jnanam madasrayam, knowledge about Krishna, doesn't mean only just learning the information or just the rote learning. You know, like the kids. It happens with the children. The parents get very impressed when the children can recite slokas. Right? And then you ask them, what does that mean? They go, ooh, I don't know. Right? So it's good to be able to recite slokas. Right? But if you don't know the meaning of the sloka, it's kind of like, well, what's the point? Okay, there's benefit from reciting the Sanskrit. But more benefit is we learn the slokas and we know what they mean. But even better than that is we should know how to apply the meaning of the sloka to our daily lives. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. It's not practical. Just like children get disillusioned with their grandparents and their parents because they encourage them to do puja. You've got to do puja, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. And then the children ask why. And the parents go, I don't know. That was what I was taught. But you know, real education means teaching application of the knowledge, right? So, Prabhupada says, out of the three, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, transcendental knowledge of the personality of Godhead. So we've got Brahman, the energy, Paramatma, the localized aspect, and then Bhagavan, transcendental knowledge of the personality of God, it has special significance and is known as Bhagavata Vijnana, specific knowledge of the personality of Godhead. Then he says, this specific knowledge is realized by pure devotees. Oh, sorry, by pure devotional service and no other means. But of course, pure devotional service is performed by, well, pure devotees. Yeah, not just any old devotee, but pure devotees. And of course, that's, you know, this is the teaching of the nectar of devotion. That's actually the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita. It's certainly the teaching of the Bhagavatam. Pure devotional service. Ahoitaki apratihata. Unmotivated continuous undeviated devotional service. That's our goal. This is the specific knowledge that we are encouraged to absorb. We absorb it first through hearing. The beginning of devotional service, the beginning of pure devotional service is Shravanam, hearing. Hearing the descriptions. That's why the association of the devotees is so important, because it's only from the devotees, the pure devotees, that will actually hear about pure devotional service. You know, there are so many people who like to set up ashrams and schools and so forth, and then talk about what they want to talk about. Even though Prabhupada says they'll use the Bhagavad Gita, but they won't teach pure devotional service. And of course, if you're not teaching pure devotional service, what will you learn? You'll learn something else. Only, Prabhupada says, the only persons engaged in devotional service can factually know the transcendental position of the Lord. So one has to perform devotional service, and it has to, in order to effectively know the personality of Godhead, to know Krishna, that devotional service has to be performed without any motivation. What's that verse? What's the Paribhasha Sutra of the Nectar of Devotion? Does anybody know? What is it? Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma anyavritam, not covered by desire to learn, not just covered by a desire to gain. Actually, both the desire for learning and the desire for material profit, they're both motivated by personal consideration. So, you know, pure devotional service is transcendental knowledge, but it's knowledge based upon understanding that our business is to please Krishna. First business is to please Krishna, then automatically we'll be satisfied. Whereas jnana kama janavritam means devotional service covered by a desire for jnana or karma. Anukulena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Uttama, the topmost devotional service, because we can perform service to Krishna and it can be mixed. That's what's called Mishra Bhakti. It's mixed with a desire for knowledge or a desire for material acquisition. You become a devotee and then people give you money, say for example. But maybe not. Anybody here became a devotee and got money? Raise your hands. If you got money because you became a devotee. Nobody? Must have. People give me money. They're not giving you money? Who pays your rent? You travel to India, you get a trip to India, who pays for it? But it's a fact, you know, if you're a devotee, if you're a pure devotee, then you become famous. People like to be famous. Who doesn't want to be famous? Raise your hands. Nobody's going to raise their hands. That means you all want to be famous, right?
Right.
Yes. Who doesn't like being famous? You know, we can become famous. Actually, Lord Chaitanya says, to become famous as a devotee is the perfection of fame. Right? To become famous as a devotee is the perfection of fame. But we shouldn't become a devotee to become famous. Right? We shouldn't become a devotee to become wealthy. We shouldn't become a devotee to become powerful. Although we find that the devotees are very powerful personalities and they become famous. But that shouldn't be our motivation for doing those things. Our motivation should be simply to satisfy Krishna. Then so many things will come. In the Madhurya Kadambini, is it? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur warns about devotional service and the anattas that can arise from the practice of devotional service. And some of those anattas, you know, like becoming famous or getting money or having followers. Lord Chaitanya says, Nadanam Najanam Nasundarim. I don't want any money, I don't want any followers, I don't want any fame. Let me just be a devotee. It may come, but actually it can be an impediment for devotional service, so therefore there's renunciation. But let me not take it for myself, but let me take it for Krishna. Right, so Srila Prabhupada could take money, he could take fame, he could take wealth, followers, but still remain pure. You know, the journalists, when they met Prabhupada at the airport, you know, why are you driving in a Rolls Royce? People are all bowing down to you. And who do you think you are? Basically, they're challenging. Who do you think you are driving in a Rolls Royce? Prabhupada said, what is this tin can? The representative of God should have a chariot of gold and diamonds and jewels and so forth. So they're all thinking Rolls Royce is really, you know, you know, that's the fit for a king, but Prabhupada's thinking, yeah, Rolls Royce is just nothing. And Prabhupada said, I collect obeisances like the taxman collects money for the king. I collect obeisances for Krishna and I deliver them to him. They're not for me, they're meant for Krishna. So Prabhupada had a very pure approach to these things. He saw everything as belonging to Krishna. Bhaktaram jagyatapasam sarvalokamaheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shantim richati. That's how you become peaceful. But when you see that everything belongs to Krishna and you use everything for Krishna's service, then whether it comes or goes, it doesn't worry you because it's not yours, right? That's like the bank teller. He counts lots and lots of money, but he doesn't get upset that, you know, it goes into his till and then out, because he knows that it's not his. So he's peaceful, right? So this is the basis of transcendental knowledge. You know, Prabhupada wrote his Bhagavad Gita at least twice, and his first manuscript of the Bhagavad Gita was stolen, right? In New York. And Prabhupada's response was quite philosophical. He said, Krishna, you know, gave me one version of the Bhagavad Gita. Now he's taken it away, we'll have to do another one. It was Krishna's arrangement that his Bhagavad Gita got stolen. If any of us had a, you know, 700-page book stolen from us after years of effort, how would we feel? So anyway, this mood of pure devotional service, Krishna saw that in Uddhava. That mood of para bhakti, or uttama bhakti, transcendental devotional service, as opposed to bhakti, mishra bhakti, jnana mishra bhakti, karma mishra bhakti, which is bhakti mixed with other motivations. A devotee has to be expert in analysing one's motivations for performing devotional service in order to purify what's in our hearts. And also to be able to pick up on what others are doing as well. You know, I mentioned this before, you know, the devotees would mention to Prabhupada how these people would come into Vrindavan temple and then they'd roll around on the floor and moan and groan and cry. And that Prabhupada, you know, they asked Prabhupada, how do we deal with these people? You know, how do we know whether their devotion is pure or not? Prabhupada say, kick them in the head. Let's see how they respond. So we have to, you know, we have to be discriminating. Buddhi or Buddha means have intelligence, transcendental intelligence, so that we can inspect within. That transcendental or that critical analysis, the discrimination is required to look within the heart and see what our motivations are for performing devotional service. And then it's recommended that we, Lord Chaitanya says, we like gardeners. We plant the seed of bhakti within the heart, or is received from the devotees. What's that verse? Brahmanda bhumite kona bhagyamana jeev Guru Krishna Guru Krishna Kripa Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. Is that right? Yeah. So by the mercy of Krishna, we get the opportunity to associate with the spiritual master. And you know, when we say the spiritual master, basically that devotee we meet who teaches us what is pure devotional service. That's the real spiritual master. Or any devotee who teaches us the process of devotional service, because that's what's going to bring us to the point of pure devotional service. So, Lord Chaitanya says that we are like gardeners. And we have the seed implanted of devotional service, of bhakti, by hearing. Actually, it's already in the heart. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Sadhya Kabu Noi Shravanadi. It begins with hearing. It's already there. It begins with hearing and it's reawakened. Sravanadi Shuddha Chitte. Our consciousness is purified by hearing from the devotees, by hearing from the Shastra, by hearing songs. Kirtan, Prabhupada says, Kirtan. Descriptions from the Shastra. This is where we get the knowledge. This is where we get the knowledge from. And then the knowledge how to apply the process of bhakti so that we can look within our hearts and see the weeds that will choke up pure devotional service. And we're supposed to pull them out. We're like gardeners. The first thing we do is we build a fence around our garden. That's synonymous with keeping good association, avoiding bad association, keeping good association. And then within the garden, the process of chanting Hare Krishna is like the watering process. But it, not only does it water the devotional kriya, but it also waters the weeds, the unwanted desires. We shouldn't be surprised that we have unwanted desires because they're the seeds, the bija of our past. They're the seeds of the reactions from our past sinful activities. They lie within the heart. And the process of devotional service is so powerful that you know it can nullify those seeds, sinful desires that are lying within the heart as a result of our karmas of previous lifetimes and karmas in this lifetime. But the process of devotional service is so powerful. The fire of devotional service can fry the seeds. Right? If you fry the seeds, you'll kill them. But there's those seeds that are germinating, right? They're the ones that we've got to watch out for. Because the seeds, they'll be sprouting, right? Not yet created any reaction, but they're sprouting. They create a reaction when they blossom and then fructify. So we as gardeners have to see the seed. Because that's subtle. That's very subtle. Or at least if it's prarabdha. Prarabdha means, you know, manifest. And they manifest in the form of material desires. So we have to be strong enough and secure enough and learned enough to recognize what these weeds are and pull them out. That's our business. This is the practice of sadhana bhakti, where we're moving from the offensive stage to the clearing stage. And the clearing stage is where we can then move to the pure stage of devotional service. But we need to know that. We need to understand that point. And so therefore, the association of devotees is essential. See, it can teach us this practical application of devotional service. And devotional service not mixed with, you know, I mentioned the other day, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was dissatisfied with his disciples because they were fighting over which room, the sannyasis were fighting over who would have which room. Right? So what did that indicate to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada? Yeah, they hadn't learned the basis of transcendental knowledge. It doesn't belong to you, it belongs to Krishna, and you should be able to work out who's going to have which room. Usually if you're jockeying for position like that, that means, you know, that you're motivated. Materially motivated. So Krishna can only be understood in reality when one performs pure devotional service. Right? And so therefore we need the association of devotees like Uddhava. This is why Uddhava was encouraged and instructed by Krishna to go to Bhagavad Ashrama so people could take advantage of his association. He was directly instructed by the Lord's grace so that people might take advantage of Uddhava's knowledge after the disappearance of the Lord from the vision of the world. This is one of the reasons why Uddhava was advised to go to Bhadrak Ashram, where the Lord is personally represented by the Naranarayan deity. Then Prabhupada makes an interesting comment at the end of the purport. He says, one who is transcendentally advanced can gain direct inspiration from the temple deity. Right? This is why temples are so important. Because one can come before Krishna and pray and be inspired. Confirmed.
Someone could pick them up.
And they're probably not going to hop up by themselves. See, Krishna's not impersonal. Just we have to learn how to receive instructions. Because, you know, we have to be careful. You know, people say, oh, you know, Krishna told me, I went before Krishna and he told me to do this and that and the other thing. Right? And you think, this is crazy. What you just said you were going to do, you heard from Krishna, that's nuts. Anyway, there's a way to defeat that. You know how to defeat it? He said, I went before Krishna and he told me that you should do something else. Right? your behavior is not a... And we can check. We can check. We have the sadhus, the guru and shastra. So we have our tests, you know. But this is why we come before the Lord, for our purification, for our inspiration. And of course one has to be transcendentally advanced to get the direct inspiration from the temple deity. It's not, and you know, we see, there used to be that fellow who used to come, don't see him these days, he used to come at 20 to 7 every morning. Right? You remember this fellow? And he would bow down before Prabhupada, then he would bow down before the closed deity doors, then he'd put some money in a hundi, and then he'd go. Right?
he doing? What's going on here? Because, you know, the real benefit of going to the temple is wait at 7 o'clock and you'll see the deities. Right? And have some kirtan and hear the class. You know, these are the things that you really benefit from, not to bowing before everybody and then putting some money in undi. What's going on there? I mean, you see a lot of people come along and they put some money in undi and they're really praying hard. Then they go. And usually it's, you know, people go to church basically to pray. But what are they praying for? What are they usually praying for? When you come to the temple, what do you pray for?
Health, wealth.
Yep. Job, education for the kids. Huh? Dear Krishna, here's my $2. Please transform it into a million. Huh? I'm giving you so much. $2. Or even if you gave Krishna $20. Or even $100 or even $1,000. What's that to Krishna? It's nothing. Right? He's got everything. But you know, the real, like Papa said, the only question that I asked my guru was, how can I serve you? Right? So the mood of devotion to Krishna is not, Krishna, what can you do for me? But it's Krishna, what can I do for you? That's the mood that a devotee cultivates. What can I do for you, Krishna? And then one has to listen carefully. Huh? What do you want me to do? Generally speaking, we're not so advanced that we can hear Krishna speaking to us. He's present within the heart, suridam sarvabhutanam, hridesha arjuna tishtati. But how many of us can hear Krishna talking to us? Anybody? Good, you're unique. Krishna's talking to you. How many people? Rare. That's why we have the Bhagavad Gita, why we've got the Srimad Bhagavatam, why we have the sadhus and the saintly persons. Why we have the spiritual master. So that our inspiration, we may be inspired by the deity, but we check our inspiration by going to the guru, by going to the sadhus. You know, I told the story before, I had a dream that my guru told me to go and serve in Indonesia. And I thought, oh, wow, that's pretty good. You know, we all like to think that Krishna's going to give us some exotic kind of instruction, right? Right? Or the guru is going to give us some exotic kind of instruction. Instead of, you know, stay here, chant 16 rounds, do your service and cooperate, work with the devotees. We say, oh, isn't there more than that? Right? And you know, we think that we have to have some special instruction so that we can have some special connection with Krishna. We already have a special connection with Krishna. We just got to reawaken ourselves to it. So I thought, oh, wow, I wonder if I should write him a letter and check to see if he wants me to go to Indonesia. And then I thought, ah, oh, no, I won't bother. Then the next time he visited, I was thinking, okay, now he's going to tell me, confirm that I'm going to go to Indonesia. But he didn't mention it at all. So I figured, okay, doesn't want me to go to Indonesia. He didn't say, hey, what are you doing here? I told you to go to Indonesia. Huh? So we have to be careful about our inspirations, right? Otherwise people will tell you, oh yeah, Krishna told me I should do this. Generally, Prabhupada was pretty wary of anybody who told them that Krishna said they should do something. It can be a sign of a sahaja, to be honest, quite frank. So generally, and even Prabhupada, who was such an elevated personality, you know, receiving instructions from Krishna, he didn't broadcast that all around the place. He kept that very, 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 very confidential.
his relationship, you know, Prabhupada never told anybody what his relationship with Krishna was. Huh? Even now, today, people speculate, was he an associate of Radharani, or was he associate of the cowherd boy? Oh, he said this, he said that, oh, maybe. Right? But actually, for all intents and purposes, it doesn't matter, really, to us. What does it matter to us what Prabhupada was in his relationship with Krishna? All we have to do is follow his instructions. Huh? So this is how we check. Our inspiration is checked by the association of the devotees. We learn pure devotional service from the association of the devotees. In fact, the biggest challenge for most of us to make spiritual advancement is to work cooperatively with the devotees. Make friends with the devotees. That's the hardest thing to do. So instead of, you know, wanting, we need to listen, we need to hear. The beginning of devotional service is Shravanam. And the way that we learn how to please Krishna and how to apply devotional service is by hearing from the spiritual master and from hearing from the advanced devotees. Now we have to learn how to recognize the devotee. This is part of the process of devotional service. Recognizing who we should hear from and who we shouldn't. But certainly we've got the Shastra, we've got the Bhagavad Gita, we've got the Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar of Devotion. We have the association of the devotees, and we should learn how to work with them according to their position and their advancement in devotional service. And we have the spiritual master. And effectively, basically, the message of all should be the same. It is the same. But Krishna says, the guru is one. Why is the guru one? Because even though he appears in many forms, the instructions that are given are basically the instructions that are coming from Krishna. They're the same as the instructions that are coming out of the Shastra, and they're the same as the instructions coming from the sadhus. They all should be, they're all supportive of each other. When there's some deviation, then we can know, aha, something's... Careful. Sit down and lean up against the... Yeah, okay. If you need a hand, we can send a couple of fellows over. So if there's a deviation, then we should know, because we, hang on a second, we read what Prabhupada said. This is not right. We heard from Prabhupada. We've heard from his followers. So we need to learn the process, and it's the anya bilashitam shunyam, without desires for material profit, material fame, distinction, followers, money. Our devotional service should be performed for those gains, but our devotional service should be done for the pleasure of Krishna. And the pleasure of Krishna really means, Krishna says, one who says he's my devotee, he's not my devotee. The one who's the devotee of my devotees, they're the devotees. So they're the people we want to associate with. They're the people we want to receive instructions from. And that's Madhyam Bhakta. That's what a Madhyam Bhakta does. We need to rise from that level of offensiveness to the level of purity. And that means clearing aside the material motivations. The seeds are still within the heart. We need to purify them, or kill them, basically. If the weeds are growing, then from the seeds of material desire, we've got to pull them out and throw them away. And then we fry the rest by full engagement in the fire of devotional service. best done in the association of the devotees. And it's this practical, it's this vigyan, this practical application of devotional service, which is Bhagavat Tattva Vigyana here, or Jnana Madasrayam, knowledge of me, taking shelter of that knowledge and applying it. That's really taking shelter of it. It is not enough for us to just know it in theory, we have to be able to apply it in practice. That's the measure of an advanced devotee, is how they're able to apply the process of devotional service practically so they become purified. And that example is the example of an acharya. That's what an acharya does. Teaches by example. They instruct, yes, they can instruct. Pracha, but their achar, their activities, acharya, their action. And I mentioned this before also, you know, the essence of the shastra, of the scripture, is understood in the behavior of the mahajanas. Mahajana janas katha sapanta. If we want to know the process of devotional service, then we see it exemplified in the activities of the devotees, focused on pure devotional service. Devotional service where we're not asking Krishna for something, but rather we're asking Krishna, what can I do for you? And we do that with the devotees. What can I do for you? How can I serve you? Of course, the devotee says, no, I don't want any service. That's the mood of a devotee. But then he'll say what he wants. Got to be practical. Right? I don't want anything. How can I serve you? I don't want anything. What are you doing here? What are you doing here? Oh, well, actually, I do want something. But it should be offered purely, or the request should be for devotional service. And without reciprocation. I told that story about how Jamuna gives the example of serving Srila Prabhupada his lunch. She said, it's like serving the deity. You bring the offering in, you offer it, and then you leave. So they would serve Srila Prabhupada, give him what he wanted, and then he would just eat quietly without any, he wouldn't say anything, and they'd just leave. That was it. And, you couldn't serve Srila Prabhupada with an expectation that he's going to notice you or say something, or he wouldn't. So our mood of service has to be like that, just put it there, it's for Prabhupada's pleasure, and then go away. Not stick around and hope that Prabhupada's going to, you know, glorify you or say something or whatever. And that was sometimes very, you know, that's challenging. It's challenging, you know, presenting oneself to the devotees or to the spiritual master and just say, what do you want? And then he or she says, I want this. Then you just go and do it. But very often we want, you know, we want some smiles, or we want some pat on the back. Oh, yeah, you're really good. Or if we made a mistake, you know, we don't want to be told off. Right? We just want a pat on the, we want a smile or a pat on the back. But then when the guru says, you're a rascal, what did you do that for? We don't like it. So we have to be prepared for whatever comes, you know what I mean? Or not that, oh, my guru told me, oh, I don't like him anymore. Happens like that with some devotees. They do something, it's not quite right. You tell them it's not, and then they get hurt. Oh, what do you tell them? What
What are you picking on me for?
So it's interesting, isn't it? You know, in the prayers, in the Shikshastakam at the end, basically Lord Chaitanya is saying, you know, whether you embrace me or whether you trample me, right? I'm still your servant. This is pure devotional service. Krishna may give us abundance. When he's giving us abundance, we go, Jai, Hari Hari Bol, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. But then when we're being squashed down, it's like, oh, Krishna, what are you doing to me? I'm your devotee. Why are you picking on me? Huh? Sometimes Krishna does pick on his devotees. Well, no, he doesn't pick on them. You know, Krishna doesn't pick on anybody. He loves his devotees, but sometimes for their benefit, because there's some anatta that needs to be extracted, then Krishna puts on the pressure. That's the hard part. We have to like devotional service through thick or thin. What did Prabhupada say? First to cry, first to dry. Huh? Do you know what that means? First to cry, first to dry. Speculate. No, it's like, you know, we used to have the ecstasy crew at the Sunday feast. You know, they'd be jumping up and down, hurry ball, hurry ball, hurry ball, you know, the loudest and whatever. But then on Monday morning, they disappeared, they're gone. And the rest of the brahmacharis and brahmacharinis are doing service around the temple and working hard and, you know, no consideration of personal. They weren't jumping up and down and crying. They were serious about their devotional service. So, you know, very often those who cry in the kirtan, oh, Krishna, I love you. But then, you know, when it comes to actually doing the hard yards, they disappeared. Where are they? So Prabhupada say, first to cry, first to dry. So, you know, devotional service is not determined by showy external manifestations, but it's determined by steady, unmotivated, practical service. Okay, does anybody have any comments or questions? Okay, what was he saying? What was Krishna saying in that? What can we? What's the principle that we can learn from that? But what was he saying at that point, do you think? What was the message?
I don't remember. He just answered my question, what I wanted to know. That's it for me.
Okay.
But
so,
it'll
happen in different ways. But you know, I'm not sure whether Krishna is acting. I mean, that could very well just be coincidence. It's not necessarily Krishna saying anything, in my mind. Could just be a coincidence. Right? So what's the
rule, not the coincidence? If it happens all the time, so it's not a
coincidence. No, but our philosophy is rather consistent, so it's not unusual for us to hear similar. In fact, that happens very often in our presentations. I hear Dame Rita Maharaj giving a class and I think, hey, that's stuff that I said yesterday. But I don't think there's anything wonderful about that. That's just normal because that's how our philosophy works. We say we're generally fairly consistent in our presentation of the facts of Krishna consciousness because Prabhupada's very consistent. Right, so that's not that happening is not that unusual. So my point was, what's Krishna saying? You say Krishna actually. So I'll give you an example of how I think of my experience. One day, when I was doing the deity worship, I used to address the deities in the evening, believe it or not. And this was a long time ago. And actually, eventually what happened was I was addressing the deities first, and then Achintarupa used to come in and help me. And then eventually Achintarupa took over the service, and then I had to go do something else. And of course, he's a much better pujari than I am. But anyway, I was... In the evening, you take the garlands off the deity. And I'm not suggesting this is anything special. This can happen to everybody. You have to take all the garlands off of the deities, and I was dressing Radha Ballabha. In the process, you take the garlands off of the shalagrams. Right? And Lord Trugram was our main shila. Does anybody not know who Lord Trivikram is? On the altar? Yeah. Lord Trivikram is standing underneath Krishna. He's the one directly underneath Radha Bala. So he receives all of the puja in our temple. If you want to offer any prayers or whatever to the main personality, then he's the one who gets all of our puja on behalf of everybody else. So anyway, you have to take off that. There's an umbrella on his head, over his head, right? You have to take that off to get the garland off. But I took it off when I slipped and I dropped the umbrella on his head. Not a good move. So anyway, the next day, at around about the same time that I was doing that, I was folding up the ironing board for my wife. Right? And I folded it up and crash, it hit me right in the head. Like that. And I thought, okay, all right, be more careful. When dealing with the deities, you have to be extraordinarily careful. So, you know, whether that could be a coincidence also, but there's certainly a message, you know. But then, really, if we do get inspiration, and I'm not suggesting that you wouldn't have got inspiration from that, but then we check with the devotees. Whatever inspiration we might get, we need to then check it with others to see. What do you think? What do you think Krishna's saying here? Now, I think it's fairly obvious what Krishna's saying if you bang your head with the ironing board at the same time as the previous day you were dressing the deities and you drop something on them. Pretty simple message. Be careful. Right? How does that sound? This may not coalesce with your feelings, Russell or Rasini, but there's my reading of it. Anything else? Yes, Ash.
Could we go back to praying to like deities? Is it alright to pray to remove material impediments from a spiritual path? Like if you get really sick and you could pray. I mean, it's a material thing,
Because sometimes we pray to, you know, have our health better because we just don't like feeling ill. Right? And we think, well, I'll ask Krishna because then I'll improve my service. Right? So it depends on how sincere we are in doing our service. Otherwise, we might pray, you know, Krishna, whatever you want. If you want me to be ill because I'm a rascal, it's okay. If you want me to be healthy, then that's okay too. What do you want me? Whatever you want me to do, I'm okay with it. Right? Because sometimes we deserve to get a bit of purification. Right? And so, you know, our prayer may be, let me, I'm not suggesting in your case, but it can be, you know, oh, let me free from this suffering so I can just do what I like with it, without discomfort. So it depends on motivation. Yes or no. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, I remember once I was out on Sankirtan and I had a fever, like, you know, and I thought, power on, you know. And I could do it then because I was younger. That's just pretty stupid. I should have just rested. I was thinking, yeah, I'm a devotee. I can just power on and serve Krishna. But sometimes, you know, we get so fanatical about things. Probably the better thing is you're sick. So, you know, take care of, it's not your, you know, Sanatana Goswami was telling Lord Chaitanya that he wanted to go to Vrindavan. Because in Puri he was sick and unhealthy. And Lord Chaitanya said, was it not going to the Rath Yatra? I can't remember exactly what it was. But Lord Chaitanya chastised him and said, you know, this is not your body, this is my body, and I want you to look after it. Of course, then he embraced him and all of the contamination went away. But, you know, we have to look after the body thinking that it belongs to Krishna. And so sometimes, you know, just to do more service might not actually be the appropriate thing. To rest and look after the body is what Krishna wants you to do. Right? So it's... Well then, you know, there was a time when Srila Prabhupada was very, very ill in Vrindavan and it was he was preparing for the opening ceremonies and he had a fever. He couldn't even get out of bed. And the chief minister of the state of Uttar Pradesh came to Vrindavan and the devotees were wondering whether Prabhupada would get up or not. And eventually Prabhupada got up. He was shaking, practically couldn't stand up by himself, but he had a bath, put on his clothes, put on his tila, and then went out to meet the chief minister, showed him the temple and everything. Maybe it might have been after the temple was open. No, I think it was before. And because he wanted him to come for the opening. And, you know, he did all of the polite things, offered him prasadam and so forth. He left, and then Prabhupada went back to bed again. He was very sick. So, you know, on some occasions it may be required that we, you know, transcend, and other times... You're sick, okay, rest. Kantarai Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.